Limiting
this conference will.
So we're going to talk about limiting beliefs and
Mary,
that.
Mary Jo.
Okay, go ahead.
What is the author's name of The Slight Edge?
His name is Jeff Olson.
Thank you.
The Slight Edge was written by Jeff Olson. How's that?
Thank you.
You bet. I think I might have misquoted that the other day.
It was three different books.
Yeah, three different ones. Yeah, Jeff Olson, called The Slight Edge. Great book. Excellent book. And it's you can look at the reviews of it on the Manatrain files on the Manatrain.net site. I actually reviewed every chapter in that book on Monday calls. So if you want to read it and then listen to that, you can hear somebody else's insight into it, and the outlines for all the chapters are there as well. Okay?
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, so let's jump in. Limiting beliefs. So, and I put a quote at the, it's not really a quote, it's a statement. It says, in every moment you are making the choice between an open-hearted response to life or a closed-hearted response. However you choose to approach life is how life seems to approach you. So a great statement about how we look at ourselves and how we look at the rest of the world. Are you approaching life with an open heart and openness for whatever's out there, or are you coming at life with closed heart? And a closed heart is a heart full of limiting beliefs. It's a heart full of things that have put constraints around you to cause you to be, you know, jaded or tainted, or, you know, have judgments and all the things that are holding you back from really being the best you can be. If we look at limiting beliefs, we all have them, because limiting beliefs come to us not by necessarily us choosing them, but most of our limiting beliefs as we kick off in this world occur when we're a little kid, because we're around parents and we're around all sorts of people that help formulate them and support them in our brains. If you look at, you know, personal development people in the industry, everybody calls limiting beliefs. They have a different name for them. Like some of you have been through Brian Klemmer's work, and he associates limiting beliefs with, he calls them, that we wear sunglasses, and he calls them programs that are running our life, because some of them are, you know, it's a belief, but it really does so much control over life, it really is almost like a program, continues repeating itself over and over again. Teresa Romaine, if you're familiar with her work, she calls them scarcity patterns, because even though we talk about scarcity, typically when we think of scarcity, we think about money. Scarcity applies in everything. We can have scarcity of love, scarcity of time, scarcity of trust, scarcity, I mean, they're all about, again, scarcity has that same connotation as limiting, if you get that, limiting scarcity. Bob Ford, who's a guy who wrote a couple good articles, he's actually a network marketer out of Wisconsin, yahoo for Wisconsin, and he wrote some articles in Network Marketing Times, and he calls it conditioning. He says we're conditioned as people. We get conditioned from things that happen to us, and those are what triggers limiting beliefs. They're all referring to the same thing, how we're trained. And again, most of it's unintentional training that occurs. It's as a child when a parent tells you, no, you can't do that, and no, that's not, you know, or says, don't go over there, or don't do this. We get constraints put upon us as children, or we have an experience that happens that causes us to, you know, pull ourselves back and protect ourselves. What I like to do it is look at it from a perspective of as a child, or even as a grown person, when we have an event that happens in our life. Let's take, for instance, I will pick on myself for a moment. I was the fourth child of four. I was the last to be born, and you know, that's fine. I was the last to be born. My parents had four children in 3.5 years, and I was the last one to come out. And as I was in 1, 2, 3 in my early stages of my life, you know, all of a sudden I realized that if I was going to get love, I needed to compete for it, because I was the fourth one. So I gave the fact that I was the fourth child, I was the last child to come out, that I needed to compete. See, so the fact was I was the fourth child. The meaning I gave to it was I needed to compete, because I saw that I was in this environment, everybody's older than I am, so I really needed to be forceful and compete. And what happened is I allowed the meaning that I gave, this meaning that I gave, illusory meaning that I gave to being the fourth child, become part of who I was. So all of a sudden, the meaning I gave to it became a fact in my life. I became very assertive, very bold, very, very competitive, and that became who I was as a person, or at least as I viewed who I was as a person. So it was a fact that occurred. I gave a meaning to it, which just recreated a new fact for me of who I was as a person. Now, the intriguing thing about all of that is that we can first of all analyze the fact. I was the fourth child of four. What does that mean? Well, if I go back and look at it, I can give it a new meaning and say, well, it means I was the last one to come out of my mother's womb. Well, so what is that? How is that going to change my life? It wouldn't change my life at all. It would just be a self-evident truth that that's the fact. But because I found myself putting a meaning to it, I changed life. I changed my life. I didn't come out of the womb competitive, bold, and assertive. I developed that as a response to facts in my life. And so I made choices about who I was. But I spent the next 40 years of my life attributing those attributes or those characteristics to Mary Jo as being facts. That I was competitive, I was assertive, I was bold, I said, that's just who I am. Whenever you say that's just who I am, let a big, huge light bulb go off somewhere in your head to tell you, whoa, stop. It's not just who you are. It is who you're choosing to be. And the recognition of, you know, that fact meaning pattern for me was just huge because I could go back and say, wow, so now I chose to be competitive instead of I am competitive. Notice the different language. So I can choose differently because competitive doesn't always serve me. So it really became an analysis of fact meaning in my life where I gave a fact a certain meaning. I ran the rest of my life around that meaning and treated it as if it was a fact itself, when in fact all it was a choice I was making in my life. And I can choose differently. Now, if you want to learn some more about fact meaning and maybe look at yourself from that perspective, I did an entire Monday call on fact meaning, and so I'm going to leave the rest of that analysis out here, and you can go in. It's 2005, August 1st, if you want to look up that and run through and listen to that MP3 and get that outline. But it's crucial that we kind of recognize these patterns in our lives, and they also run around money, because we know last week we talked about money a lot. And the money concept, we give a lot of meaning to different facts about money. Whether we grew up in a poor family, then we made the meaning that money was scarce. Okay, so now we treat it today as a fact because it's become part of, well, the truth is it's not scarce. It's everywhere. But we've allowed ourselves to put that meaning to it, and that what happened in our youth, and that's the meaning we gave it, and all of a sudden it controls our life. So we need to look at those kind of things, and those are what we call the programs or the limiting beliefs that come into our lives that are triggered because of events in our lives, because of our upbringing, because of the environment we came through, because of parenting that happened. All these things could happen. Here's another one for you, and you know, I could go on and talk on fact meanings and talk about programs endlessly, because they're literally, it's limitless how many programs people have. But I try to isolate on ones that are most prevalent in there. And one of the most prevalent ones that we see in our society is the concept of trust. Here's another one. So you go through a marriage relationship and your husband cheats on you and you get irritated, you divorce the guy, and there's so much pain associated with the event that we say, you know, the fact was your husband cheated on you. The meaning we gave it is men are not trustworthy. So we proceed the rest of our lives to look at men with jaundiced eyes. In other words, every time we see a man, we have this concept of, I can't trust him. But the reality is the fact was the husband, you know, cheated on you and was disloyal and didn't remain faithful. The meaning you could have given it was the fact that he was in, you know, he as a person didn't have the moral character to be able to handle the commitment of a marriage. Now, if you would have given it that meaning, you could easily go on with the rest of your life, and the next man you met, you could trust him equally as well, because it's not a statement about male gender, but we tend to do that. You notice how what meaning we give it then controls the rest of our life. So then all of a sudden you lose the concept of trust. And I'm going to tell you, as you look at man, how does it apply to me today? If I did that, Mary Jo, if that's my experience and I'm walking that path, and I go, well, I'll tell you how it applies to you today. You will never probably find a business partner who's a male in your Manitech business because you can't trust them. So you've right away cut out half the population as potential business partners and see how that limiting belief that you've developed because of an event that happened in your life is totally denying you your ability to be successful in this world. You might develop a great population of women, but you're leaving out 50% of our population as potential business partners. So as you can see, those limiting beliefs can really rob us of everything. They can take away our joy, our happiness, our success, our ability to be successful, all these things. And there's so many of them that unless we isolate some of those things and start working on them, we're going to stay stuck. And this is kind of a concept about stuckness, just like we talked about money last week. You know, I could spend a whole seminar just on each one of these different concepts that we have limiting beliefs around. I listed some of them in the outline. I listed about, you know, and all, you know, if you look at any of your judgments or attitudes on who you think you are, if you look at yourself and you say, well, I'm weak or I'm strong, I'm competitive, I'm apathetic, I'm not worthy, I'm not loved, I'm not enough, that's a big one, I'm not enough. Why aren't you presidential today in Manitech? Well, because I'm not enough, Mary Jo. I said, well, what do you mean you're not enough? You know, well, that's a scary one. But people think that. They think they're not enough. They're worthless. There's no hope. There's no trust. Those are kind of things. Those are concepts that we have about who we are. And those are the kind of the categories around limiting beliefs that are very prevalent. And then we also have a lot of limiting beliefs on what the world's like. Like, we look at the world and there's not enough to go around. So, you know, the scarcity mentality about the pie is only so big and only so many people can make it. And, you know, people who do make it are taking away an opportunity for me because only so many. You know, scarcity in love, you know, that I'll never be loved. You know, the world doesn't have enough. People are too caught up in their things. That, you know, all these prejudices or preconceptions or statements that we make and generalities that we live with are just robbing us of the fullness of our life. People are evil. Some people have that opinion. You know, so we have all these crazy opinions about things and judgments that have developed because of what? Because of certain facts in our life that occurred or events or environments or family influences that have caused us to come to that conclusion, which is just purely a meaning we chose to give something. Now, some people I've worked with, they look at me and say, well, Mary Jo, isn't that just called growth? And I said, what do you mean growth? And they said, well, you know, as we mature as human beings, we learn more and more about things that work for us and things that don't work for us, so we get more educated and we become, you know, that's just part of our growth pattern. And I'm going to tell you that growth pattern is learning about true facts and truths. Growth pattern is not about judgments and, you know, attitudes and negative beliefs and untruths. And yet we sometimes have a hard time distinguishing those two. We think our ability to judge people is a growth pattern. Well, I'm going to suggest to you in 90% of the instances, it's not a growth pattern. It's a what? It's a limiting belief because we tend to immediately want to be able to judge people instead of allowing us to be open to receive what that person has to offer us. And maybe our judgment is way off, but we treat that as well. But I learned my lesson, Mary Jo, when I trusted those people before that didn't work. And I go, so you're making an assumption and a generalization about all society based on one or two experiences you had. You know, those are the kind of things that I don't call it maturity. I call it creating for yourself and choosing for yourself a way to have unhappiness and no success in your life. So better to be open and willing to have new experiences than it is to lock yourself down. An interesting story is the elephant story, and I'm not sure I didn't share this last week, but I'll share it again. The elephant story is kind of just a story that talks about this kind of conditioning that we go through, that the kind of conditioning that happens in our life. The elephant story is a story of intentional conditioning. But we go through a lot of unintentional conditioning. But to give you an idea, just to see what conditioning looks like, if you look at circus elephants, when they're young, circus elephants are chained to a stake driven deep into the ground. And so when they're young and they're not that powerful, they have a rope attached to their leg, and when they pull on it, they can't go any further because the stake is in the ground and holding them to that location. And so they can't pull free and run amok. They're kind of stuck. So baby elephants, you know, they get that reaction to the yank, and the stake can't come free. So they learn that they can only go so far. They have this pattern. They see the stake, and they can only go so far. Eventually, the animal grows accustomed to the fact that he can't pull it free. And then, in fact, when that elephant gets full grown and could pull any stake out of the ground, he still assumes that he can't pull free, so he won't even try. And that's what happens to us as people. We make assumptions about life and about what we can and can't do based on experiences we've had, and all of a sudden we have limits. We got those limiting beliefs. We develop that comfort zone. We put boxes around ourselves on how far we can do. So that's the story about, you know, developing limiting beliefs and how they occur in our life, and you know, that recognizing we all have them. I will suggest to you the fact that probably the majority of your limiting beliefs, you may not even see that you have. You may not even be aware of them. You just, you're kind of stuck in the fact that I don't know, Mary Jo, I don't know what's holding me back. I hear that from so many people. How come I can't be successful? What's holding me back? What are the things that, you know, and it focuses all on these limiting beliefs. If you knew what they were, then maybe you could take some action with respect to them. But how do you know what your limiting beliefs are? I mean, some of them are evident because you can start seeing some of the prejudices you have about people, you know, and maybe trust issues in your life. And some people will say to me, and they'll go, well, Mary Jo, I don't trust men, and I'm never going to trust men. And, you know, that's a choice you're making. No matter how wrong I may think that choice is for you and for the world, that's a choice you're making. But all I do in that kind of relationship is to open their eyes to the fact that what if you're wrong? What if men are trustworthy? What if your decision is based on your limited experiences? And open their eyes to the possibility of maybe their conclusion is wrong. But if you choose a conclusion, you're going to run with it, then you're choosing that limit and you're choosing the box. And I live my life with no box. I don't want a box around my life. I want to be open and ready to receive whatever's out there to receive, so I don't live with that box limiting me. How do you distinguish? So the second step, one is the acknowledgement that we all have these limiting beliefs, that they're out there, that they're in our way, that the reality that they exist, because it's impossible to go through life without them, because our whole body is built with beliefs. And the concept is understanding that, you know, we're going to always live with certain judgments and beliefs in our lives. It's finding the ones that aren't serving us and the ones, and how do I get rid of them? But you got to first, again, the awareness is, what are they? How do I find, or how do I come to awareness of what limiting beliefs I carry? That's the next thing I want to talk about, because that's important to understand that we can uncover them. We can play Sherlock Holmes with our limiting beliefs. We can discover what they are, acknowledging each of us has them. Well, how do I find them? And one of the really cool ways of finding a limiting belief is living your life by being aware and checking every single time you feel or react some way that you don't like. Every time you're feeling or reacting some way that you don't like. So if you find yourself, and you can take, I can just, if you just looked at yesterday, some of you could probably look at this morning and just look at what happened this morning. And tick off for yourself every single time that you have a reaction. I can look at yesterday and I can probably think of two things that happened yesterday. It's fascinating. And I can think of two times yesterday in my day, and some people have two times every 5 minutes. So it's not, you know, two times in one day is probably a terrific patterning, because it shows that you rarely feel or react some way that you're not liking. Some of us have it every hour. Some of us have it two times a minute. Everybody's got different time. But this is any time in your life that you feel or react some way that you don't like, you need, it's like a big red light, a big flashing red light that should say stop. Write down what it is. So get an awareness of every issue around reacting to something or feeling that you don't like something. Because what we really want a goal of in life, if you have this as a goal, is the concept of going through life with a healthy, free-flowing movement of emotions throughout my being that that are healthy. We don't want to feel chronically guilty or prone to anger, because all of that kind of stuff is what's robbing us of relationships, and relationships are at the core of anything that we plan on doing or accomplishing in life. So you use your emotional issues as a doorway to distinguishing for you what is one of my beliefs or what are my issues going on inside me that's causing me to feel this way. Because anytime you feel this anger, anytime you feel a chronically guilty, or you have a negative emotion towards something, or you react a way that you don't like your reaction or your feeling that you're having, that's a big, big, huge aha moment for you. And too many times, if you look at yesterday, if I could just, you know, grab onto one of you and talk to you about this, I would say, okay, pick out a negative feeling you had yesterday. And it might be that you got in a little spat with your spouse. And I would say, okay, what meaning? And you go, oh, Mary Jo, that's just my spouse is this, this, and this. And I go, oh, really? We like to make it all about the other person. But the reality is there's something going inside of you. What's happening inside of you? How could you be different? What is the belief system inside you? What is the meaning that you're giving these things? And quit making it always about your environment. Quit being victim to all the environment going on and start evaluating you, because that person's not controlling your emotions. You're giving up control to them. But what's going on inside of you that allows you to do that? And how can you be different to create a different response to what's transpiring around you? Like with my husband sometimes, I'll go through an example. Historically, my husband would get into some routine about, you know, I think I've talked about this one on the calls before, because it's such a famous one, because it's a lot of people have it. One of my recurring historic belief patterns had me believing I had to be right. That's a huge limiting belief in people. Oh, and it's a program that runs people's lives, and it's totally self-destructive. And so, but I had it for years and years and years. So when my husband would say something that was wrong, or that he, in his opinions, I would get emotionally disturbed about it. I would get upset. I would have a fit. I mean, not necessarily go into a hissy fit, but it would irritate, and I would get angry, and it would trigger it all the time. And I kept looking at that, and I would get angry, and it was always his fault. And I spent 10 years, or not 10 years, 5 years of our marriage pointing my finger at him, making it all his fault, until I had this training about limiting beliefs and programs running me, and I realized, oh my gosh, I got this program running me that I have to be right. And it was my program that was triggering my response to my husband. And all of a sudden I started saying, wow, what is this about? Why is this so important to me? Do I always have to be right? Or can I allow other people to free flow and allow an environment to be healthy and happy? And is it more important for me to have wonderfully, wildly romantic relationship with my spouse, or to always be right? And that was a real easy decision to make. I wanted that wonderfully, you know, wildly romantic relationship with my spouse. So I could easily forfeit, because I saw the price I was paying by that limiting belief in my head that I had to be right. And I could forfeit that, because the price I was paying by carrying on to that belief or that program was so great, it was impairing me. It was also impairing me not just with my spouse, but where else do you think I saw the impairment? In all the relationships I had. It was holding me back in my Manatech business. Well, back then I didn't have one. I think this is years ago. But as I look forward, it was holding me back in business relationships, because I wasn't being empowering. I wasn't able to empower other people around me to the greatness they could be, because I held on to this. I always had to be right. And some of you can maybe relate to that. But Those are, it's just, it, but notice that the awareness for me is always around emotional response. An emotional, negative emotional response, or an irritated feeling, or anger, or just any type of reaction that you don't like to something is that your aha trigger point. It's your discovery point. Okay? So again, instead of going into our usual approach of who did that to me, going victim to somebody else, you just come from a different perspective. So our different perspective is, why am I feeling this way? What's triggering it in me? And start trying to analyze that. Here's some examples. I put some in the outline. I put, if you're a large family and you feel like you're unwanted, it generated no confidence for you, what could be a result of that? Well, that you have a hard time ever speaking in front of others. So you start asking your question, well, if I'm so nervous and speaking in front of others, what's triggering the nervousness? Instead of just saying, that's just the way I am, why don't I look at what's triggering that? What was the cause of it? How do I really want to feel when I talk to other people? I want to feel confident. And then you go, okay, then why not feel confident? Why not choose to be different? Go back and look at what generated that concept. It was that being part of a big family, I was always quiet. I felt I wasn't heard. I didn't have any confidence because I had brothers and sisters that were more outgoing than I was. So because of that, this is the way I am. Well, so you got a program running your life around experiences you had as a child. Well, let's change the program. The negative feeling or the nervousness is what triggers you aha moment that you can recognize it. And then you take a step forward. Well, then why not feel the way I want to feel? Why not choose differently? Because you truly, it's just a choice. How about those of you, a second example is a whining associate. How many of us have whining associates in our organization? Somebody that constantly complains about issues. The result they're creating for themselves is depression. They're creating their own reality and not moving forward because all they do is complain about things. So her life experiences have created this for her, and she's stuck in that position that, you know, she, you know, that it's always about somebody else, it's always about other issues. So, you know, you hang out with these people and they cause you a negative feeling, and you go, well, wait a minute, why is that causing me a negative feeling? You can do that for yourself. So why is it causing me a negative feeling? Because I'm trying to be empathetic and feel her feelings, and I'm going to allow her feelings to control me. Well, why are you choosing that? You know, you don't have to, you can choose not to. You can have your own opinion. You can have respect for somebody else's opinion, but you can take on your own opinion. So don't fall into the trap of taking on theirs. And the other issue is how do I support that person and help her move forward? That's a whole nother level too. So you want to make sure that you don't allow that person to control your behavior because you get zapped by those kind of people. Resentment, here's one that comes up in Manitouk a lot. I hear people talk about resentment towards presidentials. They look at successful presidentials, they have resentment. Now, what could have triggered this? Why do you resent? Look at your life and look at, and I used to have some of this resentment, not towards presidentials, but I'm talking about, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I used to have resentment towards successful people. And do you guys know where that comes from? Anyone on the call? Where does resentment towards successful people come? First of all, how many on the call, does anyone on the call want to open up and just get off mute and talk to me about resentment they might have for successful people? Great time for you to role play through this. Everybody's going, I'm not doing it, Mary Jo. Okay, well, let's. I will pretend there's somebody on the call that's going to do this with me. So they have resentment. I had resentment towards successful people because it was like, well, look at those people. How do they achieve that? How do they get there? How, you know, they must have had friends. They, you know, their dad. Well, some people say that about the Robbins family, which is somewhat, you know, there. But, you know, it's like, well, if I had Ray Robbins as my dad, I could be presidential too because he just built their organization. You know, I mean, people make up excuses. There's always got to be, we make up excuses how people got to their success level. People could say about Mary Jo, oh, my gosh, well, she got to presidential because she was a lawyer, you know, which is probably one of the worst backgrounds for getting to presidential because of the training that we go through about always having to have to be right. And, you know, there's so many programs. We're programmed as lawyers to operate a certain way. But we have this resentment towards presidentials. And what causes that resentment is this. It's a scarcity concept. It's a scarcity around that there can only be so many successful people. The pie is only so large, and that person is taking a piece of the pie that now I can't have. Somewhere in your life, you developed this limiting belief around the pie is only so large. Isn't this amazing? That we all of a sudden think that there's only can be so many successful people. And until you have the awareness that that's one of your programs that's running your life, you can't ever achieve to get over it because you don't even realize it exists. You're just going to continue to carry resentment for it because you haven't dealt with it. You haven't opened up. You feel the negative emotion, the resentment, and you haven't traced it and said, well, what is my resentment all about? Why am I resenting somebody who's successful? And you end up at a dead end because no one's ever helped you through the next point. You see it, but what is it about? Well, it's about the fact that you think somewhere in your life there's that pie that's out there that success is only so large and only so many people can be there. So that's what causes you. It's that scarcity mentality. And we have that same scarcity apply in many areas of our lives. So if we're stuck in these, so now we have the awareness. Is everybody following this, that you look at negative emotional responses, negative reactions, emotional, you know, feeling badly about something, resentment, you know, you look at your negative feelings, and that's start writing them down. If you take it one day in your life and you keep track of all the things that you had negative responses to, instead of trying to rationalize everything and blow it off, which you don't grow at all, you just blame you blame everything in the world on other people and other things, and instead of looking at yourself, take all those negative responses. If you just did it for a day, and you took wrote them on a piece of paper, and then you start looking at each and every one of them. And truly digging deep to find out where did they start? Where did this come from? What is it? What is my judgment or what is my attitude about things that are triggering this kind of negative emotion? And watch where it takes you. And if you get stuck doing that, people, you know, there are always people out there. I would love to help you. I love helping people see it because there's so many programs out there that some people aren't even aware. It's kind of like, how do I learn what I don't know I don't know? But this is how you start. You start getting into that awareness to develop it. Because until you get the awareness around what that limiting belief is, how do you change it, right? And now some of you know we went through the whole exercise last week around money. And, you know, and when you look at money, you can say, why do I have that scarcity? Your first step is the awareness step, which is, how are you feeling that you do not like feeling? How you are feeling that you do not like? In other words, what is the negative feeling? What is the negative reaction? That's your awareness. What it's about? What is that about? You tie it to specific facts. What are the supporting facts around why you feel that way? In other words, what are the facts? So let's say you get in an argument with your spouse. So here's your analysis stuff. Your first thing is you wrote down on your sheet of paper, remember we talked about it, keeping track of negative emotions, negative responses, you know, irritations, resentment. You write that down and you put, okay, Mary Jo, so yesterday I had a fight with my spouse. Okay, what was, you know, that's a feeling you didn't like because you got angry. Hopefully you people don't like to fight. Okay, number two, what's that about? Okay, so you write down the facts. Well, my husband said this and da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da and he was wrong and you go, well, third statement is, this is your third question you ask, why do you feel this way? Why did you feel angry? Well, I felt angry because he was wrong. Now you got to really dig deep. Well, why is he wrong? And keep asking questions. Ask the next question, ask the next question, ask the next question. Because what you're starting to, when you answer why do you feel this way, answering that question is the tough one because it starts challenging your beliefs. And when you challenge your beliefs, you start challenging your reality, a reality that you've constructed that perhaps isn't serving you. So it's time to change some of that quote-unquote reality that you've constructed. Just like my reality. My reality was I had to be right. You know, why did I get angry at my spouse for telling me we saw a movie which we didn't see? Because he was wrong. Okay, so that what was that about? The facts was, well, I got angry with him because he said we went to a movie and, you know, and he was wrong about that we went to see the movie. Well, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel that he was wrong? Well, because he was wrong. I feel that way. Well, because I need to be right. You know, I dug deep and I found that I needed to be right, and that was my reality. And my fourth question becomes, do you truly believe that? Do you truly believe you always have to be right? And now start challenging my reality about the need to always be right. And note that I'm not telling all of you guys that you go out and live your life wanting to be wrong. I'm just saying, how critical is that program in your life running you that causes you to be intolerant and impatient, and it triggers all these other responses that aren't serving you? So is it truly critical that you always have to be right? Why you feel the way you feel, once you know what is it about, will always be a belief system. Why I felt angry when my spouse told me we've already seen that movie was what? Was the concept that I found that my belief was, you know, I needed to be right. So why I feel the way I feel will always tie itself to a belief that we have. So let's talk about the fourth step here. How do I now get rid of that belief system? Okay, so we can talk about some of the beliefs you have around money, too, that triggered last week in our call. Whether it's scarcity, whether your fear of money, whatever it is that's holding you and gripping you around money or gripping you around relationships or trust or, you know, you're not good enough or whatever limiting belief you might want to tackle. I have to be competitive. Here's my belief. I'm competitive. It's a belief I have. I'm competitive. I believed I was competitive. Instead of that, that's not fixed. I don't have to be. So how do you get rid of bad beliefs? Well, the first thing I want you to do is, you know, is get out of the judgment around bad and good. Needing to be right, you don't want to say that's a bad judgment. It's just, does it work for you? Belief systems and limiting beliefs and programs, we all are going to always run our lives around programs. The issue becomes one, is it serving me? Is it most effective for me? Is there something that can serve me better? That's what we look at. So the issue of having beliefs and, you know, programs running us, that's the reality of who we are. We're always going to have programs running us. But the idea is evaluating those beliefs and those programs that are limiting us and saying, not one's good or bad, because if you start getting into good and bad, now you get your whole value system working on it, and you get into competition and fight with it, and you get into this battle with a belief. You don't want to battle bad. What you want to do is you want to look at a belief and say, wow, that belief isn't serving me. Remember the my concept of being right? My belief about being right with my husband wasn't serving me, because why? Because I was the one that triggered the anger. Even though he was wrong, don't go victim to him being wrong. Look at myself and say, hey, here's the response it triggers. This is how it made me feel. What were my choices around it? Is it effective for me? Is it working for me? My need to always be right. Is it okay if my husband thinks we went to see a movie that we really didn't see? You know what? That's okay. Because my need to be right that was so overpowering was triggering all this negative emotion and actually destroying my relationship. So you look at the belief. Is my belief true? And then how is it serving me? So if it's not serving you, then it's time to make an adjustment in the belief. It's a time to make an adjustment in what I'm holding to be true or my reality or who I am or what I'm choosing to be life. Okay? Here's another one. You look at myself in terms of competitive. I was competitive. I'm competitive, right? Is it true that I'm competitive? Well, I was a competitive person. I looked at it and I said, well, is it something that's serving me? Well, I didn't know I had one thing. I didn't know I had a choice around it. I just thought that's the way I was. But I realized I had a choice. I could choose to be competitive or not be competitive. Just like I could choose to always be right or not always be right. Just like I can choose to trust or not trust. Is it true that I have to be competitive? No. Or how is it serving me? It wasn't serving me. Being competitive when I go on a golf course can be fun, or when I but being competitive in any everything that happened in my life was destroying relationships. So I no longer had to choose to be competitive. I could choose not to be. So it's about how do I get rid of bad beliefs? I evaluate the belief that I have around money, around people, around who I am, around my worthiness, around what the world looks like, around scarcity of love, around whatever it is. Again, how did I find the belief? I found the belief by looking back at my negative emotional response to something. I tied back to the belief, and now I look at that belief and say, does it serve me? And how can I best support myself? Once I discover it, how can I best support myself? I can choose differently. So now I'm going to choose out of competition. Well, how do I choose out of competition? How do I choose not to be the competitive person I always thought I was? Well, that's something that takes discipline and structure. So to change a belief system that you have, once you acknowledge it, remember, awareness is first, tackling the facts behind it, really getting clear with what it is, what's that response, that negative emotion, what is that, okay? Tackling the awareness issue, and then coming to the fact that, yes, that's a belief I have. Do I truly believe it? Is it true? How is it serving me? Is it effective? If it's not effective for me, then replace it with something that will be effective. So I'll replace it with, I can choose to be competitive whenever I want to. Ta-da! Wonderful. Will that happen tomorrow for me? No, because my belief system that I have, that I've had for 40 years, is become habitual in me in terms of my behavior, because your beliefs will end up impacting behavior. So what I need to do is now look at replacing the belief. My behavior will continue on the pattern it's been on for 20, 30, 40 years. But when I replace the belief, now how do I implement that in my behavioral pattern? By what? By incorporating in my life some self-talk, some affirmations, from really having an awareness about that habit, that when it comes up and it raises its ugly head, I can choose to be different. So around my husband and him telling me what movies we haven't seen and all these kind of stuff, whenever he makes a statement that he's adamant about, I don't have to always tell him he's wrong. I can choose to listen to him, acknowledge that he may not be right, but not get into a major argument about it. I don't have to argue about it. If it's something critically important, then I can talk to him openly and say, honey, do you think maybe that's right, or could there be another way? And I can deal with it differently. Instead of aggressively approaching it, I could deal with it differently. But if it's unimportant, like whether or not we saw a movie, I can just let it go. I can dismiss it and let it go because it's not important. It's not critical to our relationship. So I just learned to develop a different habit to replace the one I had, and that takes time. The behavior doesn't shift overnight. It takes time. But how do you help replace that behavior? You help by doing things like self-talk. And there's a great book out there, Chad Helmstetter. And if you haven't read it, you need to get a hold of it and read it. It says, what to say when you talk to yourself. It's really powerful because it helps with, you know, changing self-talk, because self-talk is what really controls so much of our behavior. And when you were trying to change in a limiting belief or a program in your life or some of your conditioning, you need to change the self-talk around it to create a different, you know, result in your life. So it really services you in a big way to read that book and really start incorporating new self-talk in your life. And so the self-talk is important. Affirmations are important because affirmations are at the premise or at the basic level of self-talk. if you want to shift self-talk, not just do you say, okay, I'm going to think, I'm going to let that voice sound different. Well, how do I reprogram the voice? Well, I do it by writing down affirmations and reading my affirmations on a daily basis. And when you pick on these programs running your life and these belief systems that aren't serving you, don't tackle 20 at one time. You know, because you might, remember when I talked at the beginning and I said, how do I find them, Mary Jo? How do I find my limiting beliefs? I find them by looking at my behavioral pattern and find every single thing I have a negative response to, whether I'm feeling bad about it or I feel guilt or shame or blame or I get angry. I'm starting to record each time that happens in a day. And each one of those represents a different limiting belief. Sometimes it might be the same limiting belief, but there's always a belief, there's always a program behind it that's causing me to feel that way. So now go into that program and discover that program, but you can't tackle every single one of those programs. Some of you, here's a great one. I just have so many, I could go on and on and on. You know, you have a teenager at home, and they misbehave, and they fly off the handle, and they go crazy. And you have, now, I know a lot of you are parents on this call, and you've had a teenager that might have misbehaved, and it triggered an angry response from you. And so you go, well, Mary Jo, but it was her behavior. I go, oh, see, now what you're falling in the trap of what? You're falling in the trap that person is controlling your emotions. You're blaming it on somebody else, and you can go through that blame game, and I'm going to ask you, how has that served you in your life? How did that serve you in your relationship with that teenager? It didn't serve you at all, because when you went into the blame game, that caused anger, you responded angrily. You don't change a teenager's behavior by getting angry at them. That doesn't happen. That's not some people get motivated that way and they think, well, if I discipline them, and okay, great. So next 2 years they get grounded 22 times. And finally they change their behavior because they're going to change their behavior so they don't get grounded. But they don't love you anymore and they don't trust you and they don't like you and they don't like what transpired. So you haven't supported the relationship any. But we're using that as a technique. But the anger is where it came wrong. Discipline isn't the problem, but the anger is where we went awry. So look at the anger and say, well, what was my limiting belief around that? And I did that with my teen. When I had teenagers in the house, I kept going, why am I keep going through this thing? Why am I letting her control my emotions? What is that about me? And when you dig deep in it, sometimes what you're going to find is this. You ready for this? Here's a limiting belief. My children are a reflection of me. Wow. Wow. My children are a reflection of me. You may want to believe that. You may truly believe it. But you don't want to believe it when they're bad, because then when they're bad, that's what causes you to be so bloody angry and so irritated that you lose control, because what happens is they're going to look bad, that thus making you look bad, because your limiting belief is their reflection of you. So how do I take that? Is that really a truth? Are my children a reflection of me? I will suggest to you that you raise your children, but your children make choices for themselves. And some things in their lives will be, representative of the influences you've had in their life, but there's no way that they are a total reflection of you, because they're independent thinkers, independent minds, and they make choices for themselves that determine the outcome of their life, independent of you. And if you don't believe that, have a child, and you'll believe it. So the idea becomes, okay, so if that's a limiting belief that I have, that my children are a reflection of me, how do I change that, Mary Jo? I said, well, the reality is what is the truth? What belief, that's a limiting belief, so what belief would serve you? The belief that would serve you is a belief that says, how do I play a role in this child's life to help them be the best they can be? I'm here to help this child be the best they can be. Now, you could replace the belief that this child's a reflection of you with the belief that I support this child to be the best they can be. Now, when the child screws up, there's not an anger associated with it because it's not a reflection of you. Instead, you can sit down rationally with this child and talk to them about what choices they made, and the choices they made created this result. Is this what they want to be doing in their life? And can they see where they might have been able to make better choices? And how can you support them in making those better choices? Wow. What a different relationship you just established with your child. But it didn't occur because everything was their fault. It occurred because you looked at your negative reaction and your anger that you had towards them, and you chose to look within yourself and find what triggered the anger. It wasn't their behavior. Their behavior was just something that happened. It was an event. But inside of you is what that limiting belief or that program running you is what caused you to generate that anger, not the child. You have something going on inside you that's not serving you. Does that make some sense to people? So follow that and then choose to make a replacement of it and choose to, and again, the next time the child does something wrong, it's going to be hard because you've lived 18 years or 16 years believing this child was a reflection of you, so you've got to, it's going to take time for you to separate yourself from that because it's been such a long-term program in your life, but you're going to develop different habits to replace it. You're going to develop different, and you're going to instill in yourself different affirmations and different statements that will help you separate yourself from that program and replace it with one that serves you, which is truly what you really want in the world, is you want to help this child be the best they can be. Okay, great. So you guys got it? Does everybody, was this helpful for anyone? Did anyone trigger any issues in their life? I know we're at the end of the call.
Mary Jo?
Oh.
Yeah.
Mary Jo.
Hi.
Okay. I think, Russ, you go second. I don't know that you recognize the other voice. Go ahead.
Well, you know, all of this has been very good for me because I've got so many limiting beliefs. I think at 78, I'm going to have to take a long time to work on them.
No. But that's good for you. Just remember to pick on a couple at a time, though. Don't try to tackle too much. Okay?
Well, wanting to be right because I was an only child and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so that really set me up. But
yeah.
Could I just interject something this morning? Fox News had the most fabulous segment on, and I think it was Dr. Bernie Siegel. And his whole dissertation on obesity was so renowned. I wish somebody could find that on the Internet.
It was Bernie Siegel?
Yes.
Okay.
I think it was
Bernie.
It was a Dr. Siegel.
Okay.
And he was... And he made the mention that, you know, the obesity factor, they just had a huge 300,000, I think, plus study on it, and how that anyone who had, and again, I was in the kitchen and I ran in the other room when I heard that if you had either a BMI of 39 or a waistline, I couldn't think of 39 for women, you were subject to at least a 50% chance of death earlier than your normal lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was excellent. He also tied inflammation to obesity.
Yep.
And so it was a wow thing. If we can get hold of that, that would be a wonderful thing to use right now with the Yosemite.
Okay. And just one highlight to all of you on the call about that issue is watch out for the word obesity. Okay.
Yeah.
Whenever you're working with Osolean, And you'll notice it's not in any of my documentation. The word obesity is a disease condition.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden it triggers all the non-compliance issues. Does everybody get that clear? But being excessively overweight is not a disease condition.
Okay.
So it's a huge, I know it sounds like a superficial distinction, but I want everybody to be really alert to that fact that you want to stay away from the word obesity, call it excessively overweight, whatever other language you want to use, because being overweight is not a disease. So all of a sudden we don't have to worry about that FDA stuff. You get it? So we get outside the compliance issues, but obesity all of a sudden triggers all those unbelievable compliance issues. So everybody be aware of that. Mm-hmm. Great, great. Thank you. Russ,
okay.
Were you on?
Mary Jo?
Yep.
I think everybody out there ought to applaud you today. This was just phenomenal. You know, you wonder why your business isn't growing. You wonder what people say they just can't do it. You know, it's the limiting beliefs, and that's all based around what you said. I think you ought to write a book on this, Mary Jo.
You really should.
I mean it.
It is huge. And it's I think one of the most powerful things about it is just how do I find them? And I think that whole concept of, you know, walking your life without having negative responses and negative, if you really get it, Because you can say to yourself, well, Mary Jo, of course bad things are going to happen. And I go, well, yeah, you know, when my brother was shot and killed, of course I was distraught. But the reality is that 99% of the things that happen in your life that cause you to be distraught shouldn't even be triggering that. I mean, those are exceptional circumstances. The other things that go on, you should be able to look at and say, well, wait a minute, why am I feeling this, you know, what is it in me? And just being able to really work on that, because think about walking your life in joy 24/7.
Wow, yeah. And people aren't comfortable in making a change. I mean, they've lived miserable all those years, and they don't know what real joy is, you know.
Right.
And so that's kind of sad, isn't it, really?
It is sad. But it's great that we can open our eyes and we can help others open their eyes as well. So
thank you so very much. I mean,
absolutely. Now remember, this is taped, so you can get other people to listen to it too. So remember, it's a good one to send out to people. Yep.
Oh, you've got a tape on this?
All of them. Every single Monday call is taped and posted on manatrain.net.
Oh, this was
every
just,
single Monday call. So you can get somebody else to if you want to say, hey, you know what? You need to listen to this. See if this doesn't trigger some ideas for you and why you're
thank
feeling
you. Thank
okay?
you so very much.
You bet.
Mary Jo.
Mary Jo.
Uh-huh.
This is Bonnie. I just want to say last week's call and this week's call have been, just like this last caller just now said, have been so transformational for me. You have a way of coming at this so practically that it say, oh, I think I could figure this out. I've got to listen to this call again and again and again today because I see that you gave me some handles to grab a hold of to say, this is stopping me.
Right. There you go. Absolutely. Well, God bless.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. You betcha. Great.
Mary Jo, this is Diane.
Hi.
Last week I couldn't get the call. I tried to go into the training. I could pull off the PDF, but I couldn't get the call. Has anybody else had that problem?
What I want you to do is contact Lydia.
Okay. The other thing
something
is
with your technology. Okay.
Okay. The other because I've always been able to, and I thought, well, maybe it had something to do with last week and this week too. But the other thing was that there was a link passed through with Marion Culhane. Through, I think, the article that the lady was talking about that Dr. Bernie Siegel and this 360-some-odd thousand people, that there was a link. And if you want me to, because I got that came through, I will send that to you.
Why don't you send it to me, and then I will send it out to everybody on the Monday call. That'd be terrific.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll send that to you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's another example for you, Mary Jo.
Okay.
This is Claire. July 20th, 2000, I had my second brain surgery. The only other link I had to brain tumors was a younger sister's classmate died 2 weeks after his second brain surgery. I woke up after anesthetics that first night swearing I'd be dead in 2 weeks. Okay, that's kind of limiting.
It's very limiting. It's but and you know when you wake up and you say you're going to be dead in 2 weeks, you will tend to take that limiting belief and almost create it in your life. Now obviously you're here today, so you didn't create that, but it surely puts a stop in terms of what? How does it impact? How does that limiting belief change the rest of your life and your behavior? It can change it in many ways. You take the limiting belief that you're, you know, so then when you did live past 2 weeks, now what does that mean? You start giving meaning to it. Some people will give the meaning that I need to appreciate every day I have because I'll be gone tomorrow. So they don't really make a lot of plans for the next 25 years of their life. Follow me? So they'll use this as a reason why they don't become successful because they said, you know what, they gave me this short riff. I can't make plans for the next 25 years because this is, you know, I could die any moment because most people don't live more than 2 weeks after they have this second surgery. So they stop planning their life. They stop promoting. So there are a lot of things that can take from that limiting belief, that fact, that you gave it a meaning, and now you live your life based on that meaning.
And actually, within that two-week period, I don't remember the doctors telling me, but friends told me, doctors told them, well, we expect you to be dead within 3 months to a year. And by statistics, most people that are diagnosed with what I had are dead within 255 days.
Got it. And how long have you lasted now? When was the last time you had surgery? 2006?
It was somewhere in 2000. I had an aneurysm clip fall off. Was actually the last surgery I had. But
great. Well, good. But what are you planning? What are you planning your life to look like in 2020? Okay. Start taking a plan for that, and then we'll talk about getting rid of the limiting beliefs that might still be there for you. All right?
I was going to say what aided that. I don't know. This might not work good with the call, but definitely can see where prayer and people praying for me helped. And it just put information in front of me, and I've just been building on that.
Yep. And that's huge. That's a huge helpful point in limiting beliefs as well. Prayer is gigantic because, you know, getting, as one of my favorite scriptures is, anything is possible through him, right? And when we believe that, then where's the limitation? Where's the limitation?
And at the Last Supper, to be considered the greatest among you, you must serve the most, is actually one of the passages I try and reflect on the most. So.
Wonderful.
It all just kind of fits in well with the whole Manitech scheme. So.
It does. It does, absolutely, because we're all servants at heart. But our quest in Manitech is to be a servant and have a servant's heart. But it's also to, what am I doing to push myself? What am I doing to be the best I can be at this mission? And that's where sometimes we get stuck. We don't take the action to try to create the best possible responses. In other words, we're happy with, I hear a lot of people say, well, you know, I'm just going to share Manitech with whoever God brings in my life. And I'm thinking to myself, so we're not supposed to go out and share the gospel with everybody we possibly can? We're only supposed to wait at home and see who knocks on our front door? Is that what the Lord said about salvation? You know, so I think that we need to look at ourselves and say, use that little cattle prod and say, how do I improve? How do I be the best I can be? What's holding me back? What do I need to work on? Instead of getting into a state of, you know, well, I'm just totally satisfied with where I am today. I don't think that's what he intended for us. I think he intended us the greatness, and that anything, when he says anything's possible through me, it's about us going out and creating the greatest that we can, because anything truly is possible. So let's go make it happen. All right, guys, I got to run. I love you all. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you next week. We have Thanksgiving Day Monday call. We'll definitely be on for that, and then we'll hit the month of December. Have a great week.
Mary Jo, Mary Jo, do you happen to have a list of, because mine are tremendous money issues. This is Diane. Do you happen to have a list of any of the other books that are out there that would be of tremendous value to anyone who is really struggling with money issues?
Specifically money issues. You know what? Let me look into that today. I will pursue a couple of my gurus in my life. And I will send that out. Why don't I get some opinions? I'd like to get some cross-section of opinions on that versus just my own. How's that? But I will tackle that for you. I agree. Monies are number one issue that we have the most programs around. There's no question. Okay? And I'll give you a list of good materials to support you in that. All right.
Okay, great. And I'll get that email sent to you.
Thank you, and we'll get that out too. All right. Love y'all.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.